You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. And well, you think your leaders are out of touch, especially when it comes to technology, blockchain, cryptocurrencies. What do you think your average congressperson knows, who basically when they ascended to office, when they were elected, probably the highest tech was a 13-inch black and white television. At least that was the state of the art when I was a kid. I mean, I remember driving in my parents' Cadillac and thought it was so cool because you pushed this bar on the radio and it searched for the next station. And the fact is, there's a new generation of leadership coming into office. We don't look at parties any longer because there's only one party in Washington, and that's the Uniparty, and they do what's best for them. But technology, crypto, blockchain, all of this digital dollar, because we're going to a digital dollar, we have them already, but on the blockchain, all of this is going to become more and more important. Matthew Diemer, you are running as a Democrat for Congress in the 16th District of Ohio, and you have a crypto show. You're up on Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies. Some of them are what I refer to as kleptocurrencies. But what is the future as far as, from your perspective, of impending regulation of cryptos, of NFTs, of the blockchain? Where are we heading there? What's your platform on it?
Well, first, I don't want to correct you on your own show, but this is not your fault. This is the fault of the Ohio State Legislature moving our districts all around. I'm actually running in Ohio 7th, but in all fairness, I was running in the 16th and they changed it to the 13th and now they're changing it to the 7th. And we're waiting to see if they're going to change it again. So as you said, the Uniparty is at work and they are making sure that the voters don't know what the hell is going on. So this election is set up in their benefit. But let me say the loud things out loud. But you said the future of regulation. I think we have a choice in this country of how we want to move forward when it comes to our small businesses, when it comes to trades and vocations and our workers, how we want to look at our supply chain, how we want to work at our manufacturing, and how we would look at our position globally. And Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, that innovation, any other tech innovation when it comes to electric cars or anything you could think of, if it's not built in America, if it's not coming from America, if it's not sourced from America, housed here in America, that means it's going to be controlled by somewhere else. So my policy here is that we have to have people in Washington that want to understand that we are in global competition, to understand that innovation, all innovation, needs to be fostered and nurtured by entrepreneurs and have government regulations to lift those companies, those small business, those entrepreneurs, those people up to make sure that they build here in America. And that is the two choices I talk about. There is doing it or not doing it. And if we don't do it, somebody else will. And then we will fall behind on the future emerging tech. And I can promise you that Web 2 has already been big. We saw Twitter and we saw Instagram and we saw Facebook. And now we're going to look at Web 3 and who's going to be the leaders of Web 3, us or China? And that's definitely a decision that we can make.
Hey, you know, you're almost talking like a certain person who was once president of the United States, Matthew. If I didn't know better, I think you were in MAGA country there. And we don't talk about politics on FSN, number one, because we don't want to get censored. But number two, because we're a family show and we try to keep away from pornography.
Look, I think that the closest in policy, and people don't really realize this, there was two people that was the closest in policy on the debate stage during the primary elections of 2015 to 2016. There was Donald Trump and there was Bernie Sanders. And both those, you think they're total opposite. They're both saying the same thing. They're saying, let's empower our workers. Let's manufacture here. Let's pay Americans, Ohioans. I'm running Ohio, Americans, good wages. Let's make sure that we are sourcing things from here and future-proofing the United States. I don't know if that's MAGA. I don't know if that's a Bernie bro. All I know is that's what the American people are thinking, they're wanting, and they're looking at for the future of America. So I don't want to say that this is a label or and I don't want to brand it, because that's the beautiful thing about politics or anything of any product out there. And politics is a product. You start putting a brand on it. But here, I don't want to put a brand on what the future of America is. But I could tell you that those two people thought the same thing. I think the same thing. And this is a position that we have to take as Americans.
So America first. And we've seen that been shot down by the elites and the same people that are using Ohio's voting districts as a shuffleboard table are the same ones that have been controlling the narrative for, well, post-World War II, certainly Vietnam. They probably got us into Vietnam, probably got us into Korea and every other war since. What's your take on wars here? Quoting the late, great General Smedley Butler, war is a racket. Its profits are measured in dollars. Its losses are measured in lives. Something I think also that Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump agreed upon.
I think that a lot of people, I just sent out an email today with a YouTube video in there from Johnny Harris. And I don't know what political leanings Johnny Harris is, but he's a journalist. And he put out a YouTube video the other day about who were the real winners in Afghanistan. And he highlighted all the money that was created by contractors, by private industry, by people in Congress that were betting on the stocks rising of these defense contractors and these people who make the weapons of our for our military. And they are investing in the stocks of these companies as congressmen and our representatives, our elected representatives. And at the end of the day, our tax dollars are going into those companies and those industries and getting those other people rich. And so my position is, and I think that I think all Americans kind of feel the same way, is that I do not want my tax dollars going to enrich people. I don't want my congressmen betting on the stocks and making legislation and voting to go to wars across in different countries and enrich their stocks. And honestly, I'm sick of I would rather be uplifting people in other countries instead of trying to do regime change and moving our military into there. I am anti going into other countries and try to dictate their future. I really have to focus on America and you know, get out the corruption that is in Washington that is honestly making a hell of a buck off of this military machine.
Yeah, the so-called swamp, if you will. And look, government, sometimes the best government can do is just get the hell out of the way and let the show go on. Other times, like in Wall Street and in the financial markets, needs to be a referee who doesn't have a bet on the opposing team. Imagine a Super Bowl where all of the referees are betting on the same team together. Do you think do you think the opposing team is gonna get a fair shake?
Right. Good point.
So what do we do about this cesspit of Wall Street that basically has evolved to pretty much mechanically extract money from investors without necessarily having the best interests of investors at heart?
You know, that I don't know. All I know is we have to first get people into Washington that are going to be transparent, honest, and straight up with people. If they're playing cult politics or party politics and they're not actually representing the people of America or their constituency, then we know that they're going to be playing one side or the other. And I don't know what side that falls on. We have to be looking at the money and who's going to be investing or where they're invested in. And that's why you got to get this money out of politics, to get these, this hidden investment into their political futures out of politics and make sure that these congressmen are not able to buy stocks in these private companies and make legislation that, you know, bolsters their share price or the future of their companies. I think that's a very good start. And I promise you that I will be that person. When it comes to investing into Wall Street and so on and so forth, look, I think investment is a powerful tool. I think that the opening, you know, these markets up to the retail investor, you know, allowing them to buy, you know, shares without being an accredited investor is a powerful tool. I think that we have to have more financial literacy in high schools, in education in general, teach people about, you know, not only debt, but financing and, you know, just the whole how banking industry works. I think that'll lead you down some rabbit holes that you'll really get eye opened about how the different practices are happening, but also keep allowing the individual to empower themselves with investments, with financial literacy and so on and so forth. So the inner workings and the finagling and the shenanigans that are going on Wall Street that exists, absolutely. But I also do not want to take away anything from the retail investor, because when you start talking about regulations, the first thing they start clamping on down on is consumer protection for the little guys, not the rich people. They're still able to do whatever the hell they want and invest and make money. But then they just say, oh, well, then this mom and pop can't buy a share of Tesla, or this mom and pop can't buy a share of Amazon, and then they can't build wealth that way. I want to make sure and to secure that for the retail investor.
Okay, so Florida, the state that I live in, largest state so far to pass a mandatory financial education course. This is something that guys like Robert Kiyosaki have been screaming from the mountains for years. My kids, three of them, two of them, they all went to the same high school. The older two never had the opportunity. My son actually had a course in financial literacy, and I have to say, so far, he's been outperforming the others, even though he's quite a bit younger. What about pushing for a national financial literacy, mandatory financial literacy in high school? Is that something you're interested in?
I 100% am for financial literacy in high school. I think that we have to make the distinction. If it's national, that means it's controlled by the federal. And do you want the federal government into state's education? I am running in Ohio. I would be focused on running and putting financial literacy in Ohio schools. I hope that people who are running all across the United States is focused on putting financial literacy in their state schools as well. But I 100% agree. And I honestly think they should start younger than that. You know, look, I think that a lot of us, even myself, it took me to really go down the financial rabbit hole. And honestly, I'm just at the tip of it. I hear professionals and talk about this stuff, and it's just like, it's one of those things, like the more you know, you don't know, right? and so, but when I went to college, you know, I signed up for student loans as well. I graduated university with, you know, $45,000, $50,000 in debt. Luckily, I paid them off. But I signed up for a 5% interest rate on that one that was locked in, and then a veritable interest rate for 6%. And I was just, and I just really didn't know what the hell I was doing, but I signed up. I ended up paying for it. But you know, that's something that we should be going in more open-eyed. And, you know, the same thing when it comes to financing your house, when it comes to credit cards, when it comes to just, you know, balancing a budget and so on and so forth. These are different things that could be taught from an early age. And I think that we're just be better off as a nation. And honestly, we have $30 trillion in national debt right now. Maybe more people in Washington should have that same education.
Hey, and yeah, obviously we got a lot of financial illiterates where hopefully your future employment will be centered. But what about the concept of, we say to Wall Street, you're going to pay 1% tax to finance financial literacy programs. You can actually do the programs and that'll be counted, but they have to be done. And they got to start from a ripe young age, along with teaching foreign languages, which I think we got to get back to. Would you be in favor of that?
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Osino Resources is a Ross Beatty-backed gold exploration company in mining-friendly Namibia. Osino's district-scale land package is situated near two producing gold mines, one of which Osino's management team previously developed and sold to B2 Gold. Osino's founders and management are experienced mining professionals who have already successfully developed and sold two companies in the past 7 years. Osino has a tight share structure, and with its current treasury, it can self-fund the advancement of its gold discovery into at least least 2022. This is an exploration company with drills turning that you'll definitely want to pay attention to. Osino trades in New York under the ticker OSIIF and in Toronto under the ticker OSI. To learn more, go to OsinoResources.com. That's OsinoResources.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
I would 100% be in favor of that. And honestly, foreign languages, I think, is an amazing thing. I am, at least at one point in my life, I was fluent reading, writing, and speaking Chinese. I lived in China for 13 years, and I did business over there, and I was in upper executive management over in the hospitality industry. And so Chinese came in very, very handy. I got a full scholarship to study Chinese in Beijing University, their top university. I really think that one of the things that I bring to the table when I'm talking to you right now, and I say, hey, you know what? I'm a guy that wants to go to Congress, is the international experience. A lot of people say, let's get tough on China, and they keep pounding their chest, tough on China, but they don't even know what that means because they weren't there. They don't speak the language. They don't know the culture. They weren't traveling. They haven't seen the rise. When I got to China, when I got to Beijing, they had 3 subway lines. Now they have over 20, 25 subway lines, 28 subway lines. The growth of China right now, from their middle class to their investments in infrastructure and what they're trying to do to position itself globally to be the global dominance in financial, but from every aspect of measurement, they are taking positions to do so. And we need more people in Washington that actually saw that, to understand that. And so we can actually combat that on an intellectual level, I think.
Yeah, I've been there a couple of times myself. And from the first time to the second, which was 20 something years in between, the growth was truly, truly amazing. Hey, what about the concept of just banning lobbying? All right, lobbying is another term for corruption. It's at the heart of all corruption in Washington. Should we just ban lobbying altogether?
You know, I don't know about that, even though I want to say yes. I instinctively, guttedly, I want to say yes, but I also understand that there is education to, make sure that different companies that people in Washington understand what is happening in different industries. And so I think when it comes to money in politics, we can get that out. I think that the way that things are working when it comes to money should be out. But I think that the education aspect of it, when it comes to what companies are doing, how to get those companies to meet with legislators, and also the people to be involved with that process, make sure that the constituents are involved with that education process as well. Maybe more transparency is part of it. But the bribery aspect of it, if that's what you're referring to, and the corruption aspect of it, we have to figure out a way to get out. But the education aspect of it, we have to figure out how to make sure that's decoupled from the bribery and the corruption. And I'm just going to say this is because during this campaign is I've been meeting with professionals all across the board when it comes to running here in Ohio 7, from teachers unions to teachers to administrators to union people in different trades to police to all these different trades. I spoke from a early pre-K education center that's open here in Ohio 7, and it's like I do not know what they're going through unless I'm speaking with them. And I've got such an education from the experts. It's impossible to know everything as someone who's running for Congress or a congressperson, but that's why these professionals come in and tell me about their industries. And then hopefully with an open, transparent conversation with the constituents, we can make the best decisions that move Ohio 7 forward.
Okay. So, let's talk about cryptos here. I have a theory. I've thought I missed out on the crypto craze. I'll admit it. I missed my chance to be a billionaire. Shame on me.
No, you didn't. No, you didn't.
Maybe not. I have a small crypto position, more as just a little diversification move, a couple percent. But I was thinking, this crypto basically is anathema to the U.S. dollar, all right, Bitcoin, because if it isn't controlled, stopped, it could eventually become the global reserve currency. I think it's on its way to becoming that now because there's a limited amount. It can't be inflated out of existence. And if the demand is there and the demand keeps increasing, it can only go up in value, as opposed to the US dollar, which has lost virtually all of its value since the founding of the Federal Reserve. So, two questions here. Should we get rid of the Federal Reserve or greatly, greatly restrain its powers? And number two, cryptos, it appears to me, are the best way ever created to bribe a politician. You can give him a wallet, give his kid a wallet, give his maid a wallet, and he could have millions of dollars within the blink of an eye. So that's when I looked at crypto, as I said, well, clearly Congress has no interest in restraining the growth of cryptos, because they probably, every single one of them has a digital wallet. So I guess the questions, do we get rid of the Fed, number one, and how do we stop further corruption through cryptos of Congress?
You know, that's actually interesting. I never thought about corruption via crypto. I did my financial disclosure, as everybody who runs for Congress or is in Congress does, and I listed everything that I have because I want full transparency, and I think that that's what's owed. I never actually thought about the corruption aspect of it. Look, regulations is coming in when it comes to your on-ramps and off-ramps. Making a wallet, I don't think that should be controlled. They call it unhosted. But I mean, if you want to turn your crypto into fiat or US dollars or euros or pounds or whatever, you're going to need an off ramp. So you're going to have to go through your Coinbase, your FTX.us, your Binance.us, unless you have somebody with a bag of money that just comes to your house and gives you a bag of money. And then if you want to keep a bag of money in your closet or under your bed, then I think that's a freedom that we should make sure that we have, because I don't want to get rid of cash because of that. Everything goes digital. And then, everything is monitored. And I don't want our lifeline, or the thing that we base our life off of, which is making money to buy goods, to live, either food, water, air, whatever, to be totally, dependent on government. But with that said, should we get rid of the Fed? So I was having a conversation the other day with somebody. I was over in a conference. It was Ethereal, the Ethereal conference by Consensus and Decrypt Media. And we're talking about El Salvador making Bitcoin legal tender. And when you make a Bitcoin legal tender in a country, you force businesses to take that. You force all the businesses in El Salvador to transact in Bitcoin. And that, in my opinion, is kind of not free market. Right. You are forcing a company to do what they would do, a certain thing. It's kind of like saying you are forced to take Visa and MasterCard. You can just take cash. But why would you force somebody to take Visa and MasterCard? That's not how you want to run your business, and so on and so forth. So you're saying, should we get rid of the Fed? Is almost forcing the market. I think that if Bitcoin has legs to be the reserve currency, to be whatever it is in the future, if it's Bitcoin, then we should allow it to naturally evolve in the market. And if it plays out that it replaces the Fed, then it would replace the Fed naturally. If we artificially try to replace the Fed with something else or take down the Fed, then we're going to get ourselves in unforeseen waters. And I think that's what happens when you try to force markets in certain ways, is that you don't understand that the downstream effects of this, I guess, unnatural market manipulation.
Okay. Interesting. Just seems like everything has gone wrong for the country since the Federal Reserve was enacted, the Federal Reserve Act. You know all the history of it. Matthew.
Let me push back with that. So you say that it was wrong. So what came out of that was, say, Bitcoin, right? So because of the practices of Wall Street, because of the able to print money, somebody found the technology. Somebody had a great idea. An entrepreneur, we'll just call Satoshi Nakamoto an entrepreneur, came out with a product that could possibly be something that is more transparent and a better system than the Fed. And now it took so long, already 13 years of Bitcoin, but it took so long to get to that point. And now we're going to see how it plays into the market. And the market, this is a market. So do we artificially destroy the Fed and put something else there? Or do we let it evolve? And we see that Bitcoin has went from a couple pennies, back in 2009, 2010, to what it is today at $48,000. It was all-time high was $69,000. It has almost $1 trillion market cap. Will it be 10 trillion? Will it be 30 trillion in 20 years? And when it becomes that 30 trillion, what does it become for the world? And I think we have to let play out. It has to be natural, or else we're going to have downstream effects that we won't be able to anticipate.
All right. Well, hey, at least you're thinking in the right direction here. I hope that this interview doesn't come back to bite you in the rear, because Ben's so honest and forthcoming and open about it. But hey, if I was in Ohio, you'd have my vote, Matthew. Unfortunately, I'm in Florida. So, but we wish you the best of luck. You're exactly the kind of person that we need in Washington. Hopefully they won't corrupt you like they do everyone else, right?
I have enough friends and family and people that keep in touch with me every day to make sure that I stay honest. And honestly, it's about your network. It's about why you're doing this. The why is there for me. And hopefully I get elected, and hopefully I go to Washington, and hopefully I can help weed out some of that corruption.
That would be wonderful. Hey, can you give us your website and Twitter handle and all that, so anyone out there can follow you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The website is DiemerForCongress.com. That's D-I-E-M-E-R for Congress.com. That's F-O-R or the number four. They both go to the same place. My Twitter handle is at Matthew Diemer, D-I-E-M-E-R. And you know, if you guys like what I say, please donate to the campaign. We need money to run these things. I would love to have caps on these political campaigns, these congressional campaigns. But since there isn't any, we just have to keep raising until I go to Washington and propose that legislation to make sure that there are caps.
So are you actually running against an incumbent now? I should have asked you that before.
I am not. It's hard to say because this is an open seat depending on how they draw the line. So if it was Ohio 16, it was an open seat. If it was Ohio 13, it was open seat. And now that's Ohio 7, it looks like we might have the incumbent Bob Gibbs running. But there is a Trump endorsed Republican primarying Bob Gibbs, who's a Republican, has outraised him, I think probably like 5-1. So I'm not too sure how that's going to end up. Since I am running as a Democrat, I do have primary challengers, but again, we don't know who's going to stay in depending on the lines. We might have one drop. We might have only one primary challenger. So
this is crazy, man. Matthew,
it's absolutely crazy. The primary is less than 5 weeks away and we still don't know.
Hey, it's like, it might be your house is the only place in Ohio 7, and then then you got it, right?
Hey, but Kerry, I have one question for you.
Sure.
Why do you say that you hope that this interview doesn't come and bite me in the ass?
Because you've been forthright, transparent, actually said what you believe, didn't give me sugar-coated answers, and you pretty much said what you thought without any filter. And that's very unpolitician-like, Matthew. So take that as a compliment.
I'll take that as a compliment. But isn't that a shame that you have to, that's a compliment that people get?
Hey, so just be glad we didn't talk about anything really sensitive, or our tech overlords would be censoring us now and never even make it to the platforms, Matthew. I mean, that's real. It exists. It's happened to me. It's happened to everyone I know who is a internet media personality of whatever repute. Virtually everyone. The only people that don't, like, if you're financial and you only talk financial, then you might have a chance. But otherwise, you're going to offend at some point the algorithms of our tech overlords, and they're going to seek to deplatform you, deperson you. So that's why I say it for those reasons, because everybody's watching, and everything you say, once I post this, it's up there forever. Once you're a senator, opposition resource, when you're running for senator, this interview will come back and bite you in the ass, I promise you. But hey, that's a ways off, so you can prepare for it.
Thank you for the preparation. I appreciate it.
Anytime.
Thanks for listening to Kerry Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.